Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to the Chats That Matter podcast, the only podcast exclusively for employees of Cincinnati Bell, Inc. That's CBTS, Onyx, Hawaiian Telecom, and of course, Cincinnati Bell. So it's officially June, and that means it's International Pride Month. Time to celebrate and support our family, friends, neighbors, and colleagues of the LGBT community. This year, Pride has a special significance internally as well as externally. 2019 marks the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, which is widely considered to be the single most important event leading to the gay liberation movement. But 2019 also happens to be our company's debut in supporting and recognizing national Pride efforts. On June 22nd, thousands of citizens will flood the streets of our Cincinnati headquarters to march for equality and solidarity. To kick off Pride Month here on the podcast, we're joined by Michelle Hall, Senior Director of Product Marketing and Strategy for CBTS, and Tom Simpson, Chief Operating Officer for Cincinnati Bell, Inc., who open up about Pride and how it has shaped both of their lives. So without further ado, let's settle in and take a listen.
I just spoke to Kyler this morning. I texted him because I've been out of town for a few days. He called me and I said, hey, so I'm doing an interview about Courageous Conversations at work, and I have a question for you. When you came out, we were just like nonchalant and accepting. Was that, would you expect more or less? You know, what was that like? You know, what did you do? And he said, well, no, it was great. How you guys handled it. And he said his process was in high school, you know, he really, you know, hit it. And once he got down to college and had some friends and, you know, he came out to them and they were all accepting. And I said, so what if they weren't? And he said, well, I wouldn't be friends with them. I said, well, I get it, because you can pick your friends, but you know, your family's harder to deny. And he said his biggest concern was his siblings, which were all, you know, they were all great with it, you know, and Kelsey my daughter, her biggest thing, which he thought was funny, is like, yay, I'm going to have gunkles, you know, when she has kids. he said it was great. I'd mentioned the conversation that we had about the continuation of needing to come out out. Yep. And at the workplace now, hard it is. And he said, he deals with it and he sees it. And he has friends because he's living in he's finishing up his master's in Moorhead, which is in a not so progressive area of Kentucky, and there are kids from around there that really struggle because their parents have completely disowned them, right? So it's all about their uncle or their aunt or, you know, siblings or friends or things like that from a support group. And he said it's a hard process for some people, and he was very thankful. It's very easy for him.
Yeah. He's super lucky, honestly, to have you guys. And it's interesting, you know, I know in my experience, the people that I thought I was the most concerned about, a lot of them turned out it was a non-issue. But then other people that I thought were going to be totally fine with it have really struggled with it, you know, and I've shared coming out, you know, realizing when I was roughly 25 or so, and coming out to my parents, and how my dad was really okay with it. And he was just all about, I don't care. What's most important is that I love you. And my mom, she didn't talk to me for a long time. It was her own mourning that she had to do around losing what she thought my life was going to be like, you know, how hard my life was going to be now, and her own, you know, to me or to her, I am a reflection of who she was or who she is. So she somehow kind of took that. So it's been interesting. I mean, all these years later, we're obviously good now, and we've had a chance to have, you know, heart to hearts about it. And she's now super proud and happy and all that stuff. But everybody handles it differently.
They do.
Whether in the workplace or, you know, outside the workplace.
And I think it's hard for, like myself, it's hard to realize. It's difficult to empathize, because unless you experience that yourself, it's hard to realize how difficult it is on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is kind of that daily basis thing. Yeah. I mean, you know, all the time there are moments where we have to stop, or I have to stop and pause and think, is this, you know, do I want to come out? How much do I want to share? And it's, I mean, let me give you a good example. We went out to dinner last night. No big deal, right? Go out to dinner all the time. Check comes and the waiter's like, two checks? And we're like, no, just one check. And there was that awkward pause just for a moment. And it's not a big deal, but those things happen all the time that, that, you know, when you're gay, that's just, it's a constant that you're constantly outing yourself. And I was asking a couple of people as I was thinking about this conversation today, I asked a few people that I know, do you remember each of the moments that you either consciously came out or it was just the moment when you knew the other person knew? And in almost every case, and this is certainly the case with me, I remember that moment. Even if it was something very small, like the dinner ticket of, okay, we just essentially outed ourselves to this guy.
It makes sense. It's an indelible moment because there's a bit of trauma.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's there. It's kind of visceral almost.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Even today, you know, at work, and I've shared this before, you know, deciding to help start this ERG group, I really had to get comfortable with it's one thing to be out and comfortable with who I am. It's really another to feel like I'm standing up on the top of the chair, you know, holding a flag saying, I'm gay, this is who I am, because it puts me, you know, I want to be recognized for who I am as a person. Being gay is just one of those aspects, right?
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. I'm heterosexual, and it's irrelevant because from my standpoint, it's just an equality thing.
Yes.
But it is an aspect of my life, an aspect of your life. Right. As I've learned recently in some of our education, because it's funny, it's something I take for granted. In casual conversations, in the, what did you do this weekend? Well, you know, Lori and I, we barbecued, we blah, blah, blah. You know, we're talking about stuff we did as a family or whatever. And the moment it was pointed out that if somebody is uncomfortable with themselves, if they're gay, they aren't bringing the, well, you and your wife, me and my husband, you know, those things, it's hard for anybody to bring that conversation into the workplace, which is very casual for everybody else. That was a telling moment for me that obviously, as I looked at it, I thought we've progressed as a society an immense amount, but there's still a certain amount of tenuous stretch between coworkers, the workplace, which is something we should solve for.
Yeah. Yeah. 48%, I think now are still, you know, closeted across America. And they did that study, I think 10 years ago, and it was only 49%. So while in a lot of ways we've come a long way, there's also a long way we haven't come. We do this father-daughter dance. It was about 2 weeks ago. This is the first year we've done it 3 years in a row where I've gone with my daughter. This is the first year that she was actually uncomfortable. She was like, Mom, and she's 10. She's like, Mom, I'm not sure if I want to go. And so, you know, I asked her a little bit more about that, why. And she's like, well, I just feel weird that I'm, you know, everybody else has their dad there and I don't. And it was good. It was a teaching moment. We had a great conversation. But even for her, even in 2019, right, it's still there. And it definitely is still here, you know, in the workplace.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Yeah, that's the realization that there's that much of a struggle. And it's funny. Until you pointed out, I talked to Kyler, my son, a fair amount. And I've mentioned my nephew and my brother. My brother, who's passed, was gay, and my nephew is gay. And now my nephew's my age, and so, you know, he came out 35 years ago, and again lives in a very progressive area. He struggled, but I never really realized it, right? Because I was just nonchalant and accepting it. But I've talked to him recently, and I see how he struggled. And after some of our conversations, I've talked to Kyler a couple times, and you know, again, we're fine. It's the struggles he has at school. Or even at work, you know, and it's, I get it. That's it's like any other inequality, any other level, is very heightened when we talk about racial inequality. This is really the same thing. You know, it is as unacceptable to be prejudiced against somebody of a different race or nation. It is as unacceptable to be prejudiced against somebody who's gay.
Absolutely. I'm curious, do you think having your brother come out prepared you at all for your son? Just understanding what he went through and the struggles he had.
I think so. It was my brother and really my nephew, Mike. It was one of those things that when my brother came out, And he was in the military, and it was really, really hard for him. It didn't go very well for him. And I think that prepared me for my nephew, and my nephew, who's the same age, because my brothers are all older. We were very close, and we would go to the beach together all the time. And I remember when he told me, I was like, dude, I've always known. So great. You know, high five, let's move on. And I think that helped me with that. And Lori and I have always been, you know, we don't care. Right. And I remember when Kyler said something, and Lori kind of said something again, and I was like, oh yeah, okay. Again, have always known.
We're grown. Great. We're good.
We're good. Yeah. You know, yeah. I love you. I don't really care. Where's your boyfriend? You know, bring him by. And it was great, because I found Kyler's first boyfriend, the first time he came by, I could see that his boyfriend Tommy at the time was very, very strange, because he wasn't sure how this was going to be taken. But again, he came by for Thanksgiving, and everything was wonderful. So I think it helped him, because I think he had that struggle. And again, it's one of those things when I saw it and processed it and was like, well, try to help. But it's when you highlight it and see how it's amplified in your everyday life, especially at the workplace where you spend the majority of your time.
Yes.
That's hard.
It is hard.
It's hard.
It is hard because of that visceral, the visceral thing that we talked about.
Yeah.
You know, even me in my position as a leader, I go, especially when I have situations where I have to make like a really tough decision, where I know the decision is either not going to be popular, or there are going to be people that disagree with it, or I have to kind of take a tough stand. It's tough for me. I have to really work through that and say, I have to be okay with where I stand on this, because I know it's the right thing to do. But I know internally I have this visceral, oh, I'm going to be rejected, or somebody's not going to like me. And I know that ties back to originally coming out with my mom and being rejected and told that I wasn't good enough. And so even, you know, all these, 25 years later, you know, at work, I notice it, and I have to be conscious of and aware of it, which is why I'm so excited about all the stuff we're doing, because to me, this is just giving people opportunities to have exposure. Because I really believe at the end of the day, so much of people's unconscious bias are just simply because they haven't been exposed. So when I grew up in Juneau, Alaska. There was one high school, graduating class of 300. We had two African Americans, right? I didn't even realize I had an unconscious bias there until I moved to Seattle, big city, right? And which is great. I mean, I've come a long way and all that. But I think that is, exposure is so much. And so I think everything that we're doing is just trying to bring awareness to people.
I agree.
Right? Through the workshops we're doing, through all this different stuff, just so that people feel comfortable having the hard conversation or asking the question they've always wanted to ask, or for people coming out and bringing their full selves to work.
And having rational discourse about it.
Yes, exactly. Having this kind of conversation,
yeah.
Right? Like is there something that you've always wanted to ask either your brother or your son that you felt like, you know, if I didn't have any, you know, fear or trepidation, I've always wanted to know this.
Oh, that's a good question. I didn't get a chance to ask my nephew, Mike. So he's been with his partner, Jimmy, for 25 years. And they're still, I thought they actually got married. They're still not married. And I want to know why. You know, it's one of those things, even Kyler, I would ask, would you get married?
I don't know if I'm not sure if the mass population in Cincinnati knows, but the Supreme Court case for gay marriage that passed in 2015 was actually about a couple that was here in Cincinnati.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually James Ogerfeld. So he was with his partner, John Author. He was in OTR. They were together over 25 years. He got ALS. One of the partners got ALS. And as he was dying, they got married in Maryland. And as he was dying, he really wanted to be named as the surviving spouse. Apparently they put that on the death certificate. And so that is the one that actually went all the way up to the Supreme Court and made gay marriage legal in the country. I don't know. I'm not sure that people know that, but happened right here, OTR, Cincinnati.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yep.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's incredible. Are you married?
We are not married.
You're not married.
No, no. Okay. So Sarah and I have been together. We've known each other 9 years. We've been together 7.
Okay.
And we have always thought that at some point we would probably get married, probably because we needed to for medical reasons as we get older, honestly.
Well, insurance neither one and tax of us, are like the most legit reason.
Right. Exactly. So we have, you know, neither one of us have ever had this, I have this burning desire to get married and have the whole fanfare. Neither one of us really have had that. So we just haven't, but at some point we will, I'm sure. I mean, we own, you know, homes together and we raise 2 kids together and, you know, all that, but.
Yeah, I agree that the fanfare and stuff like that, maybe you don't, but again, there's a certain amount of pragmatism in ultimately if somebody has medical issues or, you know, God forbid something bad happen, you know, having some sort of protection, I think is, you know, there's reasons to do that, right? And I'm not saying you need to go get married, but you know what I mean?
I do.
It's a question I've always asked anybody that's together is, and I'm, you know, curious if, so you haven't become married for practical reasons, but.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's odd because I'm asked that all the time. I'm like, why aren't you guys married? Because most of our other friends are married. We're like, I don't know. We just never
got around. No, that's fair.
Got around to it. But I do know at some point. Yeah. I'm sure we will. So we'll see.
I have a funny story. Sorry about when Lori and I got married.
How long have you guys known each other? Did you get married out?
No, there? No, we got married out here. Okay. Geez, we've been together. This year will be 20 years.
Wow.
So our oldest is 25. So
you have a blended family?
We have a blended family. And I remember when I took Cody to go get a ring, we went to where Lori worked and Cody walked in and said, Tom's going to marry you. So he kind of blew the whole thing up. But it actually turned out to be a cute story. But
you mean Cody told her instead of you telling her?
Yes. Yes. Cody totally broke everything up. But it's funny. It's Laura and I had a pretty pragmatic approach because we just went to the JOP and like had a 45-minute ceremony in the park, kind of high-fived.
Yeah.
At the end of it, and we picked July 1 because that was just like the middle of the year, and you know, it's fine.
That's funny. Did you have a big party at least?
No.
Oh. No. See, now I have this is my theory on weddings. People spend way too much money on them.
Yes.
Spend very little on the actual wedding itself and take all that money and either go traveling for a while with some of your closest friends.
Agreed.
Right? Uh-huh. Go have like a little something somewhere. Or you throw a big bash and you spend all the money there. I don't know why people spend so much money on the actual wedding. But that's my own personal bias and I recognize that that's my own personal bias.
It's because you're a pragmatic person. That's what it is.
I am.
Yeah. I had this... I'm not going to spill too much about my kids. I want them to get any ideas, but I've had this conversation with our daughter that it was, you know, hey, rather than have a big, she was just married, rather than have a big wedding, you know, how about down payment on the house? And she elected for a big wedding and down payment on a house. So I lost that conversation. So anyways, that's interesting. It's interesting. Well, it's so you've been together 9 years or 7 years.
Yep. Actually, Sunday is our 7 year anniversary. Yeah.
Awesome.
But we've been together 9.
Happy anniversary. Yeah.
But 7 years is when we celebrate.
Okay. And how old is your daughter?
So my daughter is 10.
Okay.
Yep. And I actually had her on my own.
Wow.
Before Sarah and I were together. I knew I wanted to have a kid. I was getting older and I said, you know, I'm going to just go do this on my own. So I went and did it on my own. And then Sarah and I met when Makai was like a year and a half, I think. And then she has a 16-year-old from a previous relationship.
So you're also a mixed family.
We're also a mixed family, yeah. And we have him half the time. And that is really great because both the moms are fabulous and that he just goes back and forth.
Well,
awesome. It works out great. Yeah. Like there's no...
But see, you know, what you're describing, I believe, is a larger representation of America. Mixed families.
Yeah.
It is... You know, when I see what makes a country great is that the fact that you have, you know, two parents in a relationship nurturing for their kids is really all that matters.
That's the most important thing.
Yep.
I know people get hung up a lot of times on what does the perfect family look like? And a lot of that might come from, you know, beliefs or backgrounds or whatever. But I think at the end of the day, really the most important thing is love and families, you know, trying to love each other and move forward together.
Love is love.
That. Yep. Makai never in a million years, she never questions how loved she is. I can tell you that.
Good.
And she will be a better woman for it.
I always say that these things are slightly generational, which they are, but it's, you know, it's 2019. So I think that people, education like this, I hopefully helps.
Yeah.
Hopefully helps. As I've said, even when you talk about, to me, talking about equality with on the level of gay or heterosexual or on the level of racial epithets, you know, it is about equality. And just like politics or religion, it's okay, again, to have rational discourse. People can have their own beliefs, but they need to be accepting of each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's where that idea of everybody has personal beliefs and whatever those are, you know, fine. And then we have corporate, right? Corporate
exactly.
beliefs and corporate values. And it's sort of where those intersect, and where they intersect is just about having a mutual respect for each other.
Absolutely.
And the idea of having discourse is hard for us in our company. It's hard in our country.
Society right now.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. I was going to say in the country, it's really hard right now. But, it, you know, having courageous conversations is it makes people uncomfortable, and it's hard, you know, but it's important, which is why we're doing the work.
And, you know, the thing I would say is if somebody is uncomfortable, I think that's even talking about it, I would say that's what the ally group is for, right? This is the Pride in the Ally group. It's a place to come for education and support and, it should be the nexus for that. And if you still have misgivings, that's fine. Leave it at home.
Yep.
It doesn't belong in the workplace.
It doesn't. We are all followers and we are all leaders at the same time. So while I look up to people in this organization, for behavior and for who they are as a person and as a leader and traits and all that stuff, I know equally as much other people are looking at me. So I think that part of what this is of just where we are in this country is being divisive. Part of our role, I think, as leaders is not only obviously to serve our shareholders, serve our customers, create value, make sure we're profitable and all those things. I also believe we have a responsibility, and I'm curious kind of your thoughts on this too, especially being in an executive role, our responsibility for something even more than that, right? Of how we affect people in this company. And I really also believe that as we affect people in the company and people bring their full selves and all that, whether it's a LGBT thing, whether it's a African American, our Latino community, our vets, I mean, all that stuff. I think the more diversity we have, I mean, diverse teams are more effective teams. There's tons of research that you can find on that.
100% agree.
And I think that that's part of our role as a leader is to be good stewards and good role models to allow people to do that. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, I think about it this way. Our corporate fiduciary responsibility is to deliver financial results for the greater corporation, right? The corporate responsibility and the executive responsibility is effectively to usher the interest of the shareholders, the interest of the corporation, the interest of employees and the community. And I know the way Lee thinks about it and the way I think about it is this company has been around for 145 years, part of the community. The goal is to make sure that it's here for another 145 years. And that leads to future generations of employees and future goodness for the community. So by making sure that this is a excellent place to work for everybody, that's part of the corporate responsibility. It shouldn't matter what the topic is. It's okay for we want people and future generations to be here.
And it's leaving it better than when you got here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's always inching the progression forward, one step at a time. And this is a long overdue step.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But I'm excited to see that step at the same time. So yesterday I was out at lunch and they came out really early, but the Pride sponsor flags are all over downtown right now. And I took a picture. I'll show you when we're done.
Oh, I haven't seen them. I haven't seen
with
them
our big old, with our big logo on it and the Pride flags. And man, I never thought I'd see the day. That just makes me so proud to think of how far, and we know we need to take this step. And I know that, you know, the city has come a long way for sure. But I think we have, as a company, you guys as a leadership team, I think are really changing the culture.
I hope so.
I think so. I mean, I think so. And I do think that we leave it better. I mean, that's the way I think about it. You leave it better than when you came to it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
That is the ultimate goal.
Yeah. And Lee also talks a lot about not only in the company, but in the city. It's always about how do we maintain and attract top talent
right
to this city. And these are one of the ways that we do it.
You're right? Absolutely right. So again, going back to the corporate responsibility, if you want a business to be sustainable over the long term, you know, when you look at our business, we look at things in the short term, you know, quarterly, monthly, yearly, and that's just the normal fiduciary obligation. But ultimately, for the business to be sustainable in the long term, and we're talking another generation or more, because remember, especially in Cincinnati Bell, there's 3 and 5 generations of employees in this place. To continue that and to be competitive in a capital marketplace, you want to attract people, right? You want a diverse workforce. Groupthink is very dangerous. You want a diverse workforce with a diverse amount of talent, a diverse amount of skills, diverse opinions to progress the business forward. And the only way to do that is to promote things like this. If we said that we want a certain type of employee all the time, you could do that. Typically, you see those businesses are not sustainable, or you end up with, you know, some very troublesome things in the newspaper. Those are things that we're not going to do. So making sure that if somebody's in school or is at another job and they see that this is the place that they want to be because of whatever their beliefs are, and they feel comfortable working here no matter what the issue is, that's the place that we want to be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly where we want to be. Yeah. We've been working on all this Pride stuff, right? For June.
Yeah.
It's amazing. All of the under 40s, the younger, you know, talent that we have in the company, they're the ones that are the most fired up about what we're doing. I mean, they're coming with so many amazing ideas. I mean, window, you know, designs, I mean, just all sorts of great things. And I think the younger talent, younger generation, they like experiences and they like to feel like the idea of work and personal really blends a lot more, it seems to me, for them. That's been my experience so far, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least while they're at work, it's this idea of they have experiences together, right? Instead of just we're working on this one particular initiative and then we go off and do our own thing. So
agreed. Because I look at it this way. It's ultimately we are a team, right? The entire company is a team. And, you know, this is another essence of building a team is, and you're right that the younger generation, ultimately we're going to be in a workforce only a little while longer, right?
Right.
At some point in time, you know, Lee will retire, I'll retire. We'll all end up moving on. And you want a newer generation of workforce in here. I see that across the a lot, if not all, facets of the business. Our median age of the company continues to get older, which is perfectly fine. If you're not attracting the next generation, it's hard to build that sustainability. And you, again, going back to the team and all the employee resource groups or the affinity groups, you want those teams because, again, that makes for a stronger company.
Yeah.
You know, these are all, frankly, slightly non-altruistic reasons why you want this in a corporation at a corporate level. But, again, it still drives the right outcome for the employees and the community.
Yeah. Do you think because we have a older workforce, that's why we're so closeted? Or why do you think we're so, we're a closeted company.
We're a conservative company. Conservative on all fronts.
Yeah.
It takes time to change that. And a closeted company, I guess maybe you know better than I do. Is that because it's Cincinnati in the Midwest, or is that just this company?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm I'm just asking the question. I'm not sure. But there are very few people. I mean, I definitely know people in the organization that are gay, but they're not comfortable being out here. Just for, I know that to be a fact. So I just question myself, well, what, you know.
I get it. Hopefully this helps. And if it doesn't, I understand.
Yeah.
It's going to take time.
I do. I agree.
Yeah.
I do think it's going to take time.
And it's, again.
And we're getting there. We're making strides for sure. We're doing good stuff, but it will take time.
Sure.
You know.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
And I, again, hopefully this helps people at least be more comfortable. But the, and I think for anybody that is heterosexual that listens to this, it's the, you have to take some time to work on empathy. Even for me, it's I understand, but it's very, very hard to empathize or realize what's going on in somebody else's life when they're going through struggles like this.
Right. Right. Because you don't think about it. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I've been asked a lot more lately with all this, like, what does it mean to be a good ally? Like, what does that mean exactly?
That's
right?
A good question.
And I always just respond by just act like you normally would. So the example that I think I've shared before is, you know, on a Friday afternoon, everybody's talking about what they're doing for the weekend. There's somebody that you know is, you know, or you suspect or whatever is gay. Just what are you doing for this weekend? I'd like to hear about it. You know, or just have a normal conversation.
That's fair.
Right?
Yeah.
Like those are the kind of things I think that make a difference for people.
As always, thanks for listening to the Chats That Matter podcast. This episode was hosted by Annette DiTomaso. That's me. With editing and production by Matt Mulcahy. Special thanks to our very special guests, Michelle Hall and Tom Simpson. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts about the podcast, please send us an email at ctmpodcast@sinbell.com.